At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Entering Kenmore. Doors will open on the left.
How's it going, everyone? Welcome to episode 16 of Entering Kenmore. I am David Azer alongside Zach Coe. Zach, I'm not going to lie, it's another depressing week to be a Boston Red Sox fan. I guess it started off well. We can start before the Royal Series because there was news that came out that John Henry actually flew down to Kansas City to meet with Rafael Devers.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird situation because John Henry has largely been absent for the last, 4 years at least, minimum. And so obviously we covered all the Devers stuff with him saying he's not going to play first base, blah, blah, blah. We don't need to get into it. We did like an hour on it in the last episode. But anyways, Henry, Sam Kennedy, Craig Breslow, they fly down to Kansas City. And from my understanding, they met, it was a three-person meeting between Cora, Devers, and John Henry. And I don't know what to make of it. It's like, it's nice that Henry cares. No one's going to say what they said. And until we know what was said, like, I don't really know. Like they said that they talked about being a good teammate. Like, I don't know. That's kind of like Rafael Devers knows what it is, what it's like or takes to be a good teammate. I don't know. I understand the like symbolism of them going, but I don't know. He's not playing first base. He's not taking grounders at first base. And Cora said that right now there are no plans for him to take grounders at first. So if it was like, all right, you're going to play first because that's what it means to be a good teammate. And you're making $300 million fucking dollars. And I'm the one signing your check. So you're going to do what we say. Like, it didn't work then.
Yeah, it's interesting because Alex Cora joined WEEI Afternoons today. And it seemed like he didn't fully close the door on the Rafael Devers to first base. I don't remember the exact quote, but it was something like, we're having conversations about first base with Craig, and he's doing some research. So that could mean they're kicking the tires on a potential trade market early on in the season. We'll see how that pans out. But he also didn't make it seem like they were fully out on Devers playing first. So I imagine, like we said, we set the date for, I think it was June 1st, that Rafael Devers will at least be taking grounders by then. I think we're probably still trending that way, especially given the state of the team right now, which we'll get into later. But either way, I think it's interesting seeing John Henry kind of get off his ass. I mean, he spent money this offseason. He moved assets to get Garrett Crochet as well. So it seems like you can see him kind of just waking up this season. It's interesting because they're still 500. And given the roster, they should be a hell of a lot better than that. But either way, to see your owner bought in more than he typically is still a cool sign to me.
Yeah, and it's, what was it, Buster Olney earlier in the season reported that his love of baseball or like his passion for baseball was reinvigorated, or I read exactly what the terms was that was used, or even if it was Buster Olney, but I remember seeing that a couple weeks ago. So it's good, like you said, it's good to see him come out. It's good to see him kind of prove that that report is true, and obviously he made the financial commitment to them. And not to mention, we're going to get into the roster construction stuff, but Sam Kennedy on Nesson said that, like, essentially said that Anthony and I are right around the corner. So like, we know the ownership group is invested in the team and like paying attention to what's going on. So it's encouraging to see it. Like I said, John Henry's been an absentee owner for the better part of 4+ years. So
yeah, no doubt.
He's finally back.
And It makes you question where the team is headed, because I think in years past, when they were a middle-of-the-road team, you could kind of tell from the start they didn't really do anything to supplement that team in years past. They were just mediocre for the entire year. And this year, it's interesting because, yeah, they are middle of the pack right now, but you can see on paper this team should be a hell of a lot better. And also, you already had the financial commitment from Henry in the offseason, so you wonder how long they're going to be satisfied with a mid-team at this point when it should be better. So I'm kind of more optimistic than I was, kind of even heading into this podcast episode, that maybe they for once won't just bend over and be like, okay, well, third place in the division, but we're selling Fenway Franks and the Fenway experience, so who gives a shit what the product is on the field. To me, it seems like that might be turning a corner.
Yeah, I'm not completely sold. What is John Henry going to go to Craig Breslow and be like, you're calling up Marcelo Meyer tomorrow? Like, I don't see that happening in them. Like, also, I don't know that I would want like Henry to step in and do something like that. Like when it's step in and do something like, hey, here's a blank check, give it to who you think fits this roster best. That's one thing. But when it's call up this prospect, I feel like it's another thing. Like that's kind of a little more telling him how to do his job than I'm comfortable with my owner doing. And that's not to say that I don't think Meyer should be up. Like I've made my feelings about Trevor Story known over and over and over again. And I can't see how they continue to justify not having him up. But yeah, I don't want to see Henry be like, let's get Roman Anthony up here tomorrow, because then like we're going to get into it, but the roster construction already makes no sense. And that's why they're not up yet, because the roster doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, my line of thinking was more on the acquisitions point, because seems like with first base in particular, he's at least having the meeting with Rafael Devers surrounding the potential of playing that position. Or the way Alex Cora said it today was Craig is also doing research. So I wonder if that means some sort of trade could be coming. Who knows? But the point being that it's cool to see John Henry actually doing shit.
Yeah. Agree.
Yeah, I mean, aside from that, not a whole lot doing. It's interesting that the meeting with Rafael Devers came before this Royals series, because he had an absolute hell of a series and really just kind of shut everybody up who was once again calling for his head. Once again, oh, let's trade him for Vladdy after Vladdy signed a fucking million-year extension. Like, yeah, now
a single good trade proposal.
No.
After that happened, after Devers came out and everyone wanted him dead, there was not one. There was, like, it was a Cubs one, I think FanDuel tweeted that one. It was, like, Moises Ballesteros, who's a catcher, Matt Shaw, and, like, Colin Rea for Devers and Sean Newcomb. I was like, who? Like, how does Matt Shaw make sense on this team, first of all? But I mean, obviously it's a ridiculous hypothetical, but like realistically, how many players in Major League Baseball would you trade Rafael Devers for? I said like maybe 30.
Yeah. That's probably a good number. I guess I would have to see a list.
Yeah. I mean, there are the obvious ones.
Right.
And then like, I don't know, like the issue with that is like all the teams with players that I would want won't take on the salary.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Pirates, for example, like give me Paul Skeens for Rafael Devers. Yeah. The Reds. I don't know. They're not trading. If it ever got to, I said this last night, kind of venting to my friend, but if it got to the point where Devers was ever like, all right, I want out, like, I'm tired of being here. You've jerked me around for the entire season. And like you guys can just go fuck yourselves. Get me out of here. Then Breslow should be fired, because if it got to that point and that was a completely bungled situation from front office from start to finish, we talked about it on the last episode, but I expect so much more professionalism from the front office of the fucking baseball team than I do the third baseman. Like for them to treat him like that to the point where he wanted to be traded is completely inexcusable and a fireable offense, especially when it's a guy that you gave the richest contract in franchise history to.
Yeah, definitely agree there. I'm glad it didn't get to that point. I mean, we were both kind of predicting that it would sort of sort itself out or fizzle over, and that largely seems like what it's done so far. Like, we haven't really heard of another development coming from Devers besides the meeting with John Henry, and I guess no news is good news.
There was the there was the Chris Cotillo tweet that they asked him in Kansas City to talk and he said no. And then the second time he was like, or the on Friday, he said, I talked yesterday. On Saturday, he said no. And then on Sunday, he said, maybe in Detroit, I need some time to cool down.
Hmm.
And then I, to my knowledge, he didn't speak tonight.
I hope not.
I'm going to look right now.
I don't think he did. But either way, we can kind of not gloss over this Royals series, but it was an encouraging series as a whole. You probably should have swept them. Not going to lie. That extra innings game on Friday was tough. I mean, you were in that game. It was a pitcher's duel. I think it was nothing heading into extra innings. And then I want to say the Red Sox put up a run in, what inning was this? They put up a run in the top of the 11th, and then the Royals tied it up. And then you don't produce again in extra innings with a ghost runner starting on second base, and you score no runs. That's inexcusable, and you ultimately lose the game. So a lot of one-run losses.
It's an overarching theme with the this team, and I know we've talked about it a lot before, and it's been an issue for years now. Mm-hmm. Runners in scoring position, they just don't convert them at a high enough rate. And it's, besides having a bad bullpen, it's one of the most frustrating things you can do for me on a baseball team is just be terrible with runners in scoring position, because it always immediately comes back to bite you in the ass. For example, last night, you have the bases loaded, one out. And you don't score. And then immediately Garrett Whitlock melts the fuck down and gives up the lead. They it always comes back to bite you in the ass. And it drives me nuts. And I'm going to get the numbers for where they rank. But I looked it up the other day. And I think they were 19th at the time with runners in scoring position. That's in WRC+. So it's just, it's not good enough. It's not getting the job done. And sure, the offense scored, what, 5 runs tonight? That should be enough, but it wasn't. And it's never just, like, nothing can go in one direction all at once. And I know we're just kind of veering off topic, but I'm just, it's driving me insane.
Yeah, it's tough to go back to the Royals series after getting swept in the following series, where you were riding really high. The Royals were on a heater coming into this series. They'd won like 15 of their last 17 or whatever the specific number was. And you won a series against a good team. Not only that, you beat their two best pitchers in Cole Reagans and Seth Lugo, both of which we were not super confident in heading into the series. So it has felt the same all season.
Oh, speaking of that last game, my lock parlay of that game on Sunday, Salvador Perez bases, Bobby Witt bases. That did not hit, unfortunately. My first lock of the game on entering Kenmore is a loss.
Oh, well, what are you going to do?
Hate to see it.
Bobby Witt Jr. did not have a good series at all.
No, he was bad. Yeah. He had a good game against Crochet. He had a 3-hit game against Crochet, but then struck out in the 7th inning there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which was an awesome strikeout, an awesome call by Will Fleming. And Mike Monaco. Mike Monaco has been on a heater the last week or so.
He's so much better than OB.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you wonder when they're just going to make that call. I don't think it's ever going to happen.
No, I don't either. Didn't OB sign an extension like not too long ago?
That, and I think Mike Monaco has also been kind of in the mix for some other jobs. I want to
say. Yeah, he was in the mix for the White Sox, I think.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that. And we were all kind of hoping, I mean, obviously it would have been good for him, but I was hoping that he stuck around here because I love, it's always a treat either if he's on the radio or if he's on the Nesson call when OB's doing something else, then it's always a pleasant surprise because he just has so much more emotion. And I know that's kind of a common law in O'Brien's call, so, and a lot of people will complain about that, but either way, I really enjoy Mike Monaco. I think he had a bunch of cool moments that were clip worthy in these series. In game 2 of the Royals series, that was the 10-1 victory where you were kind of expecting a pitcher's duel. You got it for a large part of it, but Reagans did not fully look like himself, and Crochet kind of just shoved it up their ass for
but he still struck out. Reagan still struck out well, like nine guys too.
I think it was, yeah.
It was kind of the same story with Skuball tonight too. Like he struck out 11, but he walked a batter, which was, I think they said, his first walk in 17 innings or something like that.
Jesus.
And only his second walk of the year or something. It was something ridiculous. But it was kind of a similar story is that Reagan start, because he struck out a lot of guys, but also he wasn't doing a great job limiting contact. Like it was either a hit or a strikeout. There weren't a lot of outs made just on balls hit and play, which is nice to see. You're getting a little bit of BABIP luck, which I'll always complain about if it fits my narrative. but yeah, Crochet, he again, finally, like it seemed to all click. He gives you seven innings. You get Bobby Witt versus Garrett Crochet with bases loaded, right?
Yep.
In the seventh inning to close out the start, and he punches him out. Like, it's, I mean, Crochet is just, I tweeted the other day, Alex Bregman rocks. That is applicable to Garrett Crochet as well. He rocks too.
No doubt. And it's awesome to just see the ace that you were looking for do ace shit. Because this is a guy that the Red Sox haven't had in a long time. And we were hyping this up through the whole offseason since they acquired him. And to see it with your own eyes for your baseball team is pretty fucking dope.
It's so sick that they got the extension done too. So it's now, like, imagine the cloud that would have been hovering over everybody where I don't know where he sits in Cy Young odds right now, but I'd imagine he's still in the top three. He started the year's number two. So to have him pitching the way he is, and like we said on the last episode, he says there's another level to get to. Like, he doesn't, he thinks he can be even better, which is crazy because he's already been disgusting. So it's just, it's everything we wanted out of him, and we're going to get to the preview, but Friday night we have an absolute fucking banger. Back-to-back Garrett Crochet starts are absolute heaters in terms of a pitching matchup, and you have Chris Sale coming back to Fenway. So it's the last guy to be that guy versus your current guy, which is really cool.
Yeah. I'm going to be circling my calendar for that. And it kind of is tough now because the Celtics forced a game six, which is, I think, at the exact same time as that pitcher's duel. So I'm going to be double screening it. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, the dude has a 1.93 ERA right now. I mean, it just seems like every start, he feels like the guy to stop the bleeding, which obviously you don't want to lean on as much as you're doing right now, but it seems like
now you need him again.
Exactly. Yeah. And it seems like whenever the rest of the rotation figures it out, it's just going to be all systems go. And I look forward to that day. It's not right now, but another bright spot in this series was Lucas Giolito, another guy who had a couple question marks heading into this start because he made his return three starts ago now. So his first start was really good. He did have the hiccup in his last inning of work, and that was against the Guardians or the Twins? It was the Blue Jays.
Blue Jays, yes.
Yeah.
No. Blue Jays was the first start. Who blew him up? What the fuck? Well, maybe it was the Twins.
I think it was the Twins. Oh, no, it's the Rangers.
Right. Because Evaldi was pitching on the other. Jesus Christ, how the fuck did it take us that long to get there?
It's late. A lot of these games jumble in my head. And I was also at that game where Giolito got the piss beat out of him by the Rangers.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that, like you said, they all blend together. Every single game, they either get blown out or they kick you directly in the dick. That's how every game goes. There's no in between those two. You're a young buck, so I don't know if you were on Twitter in like 2015, 2014, Red Sox Twitter. There was a guy that used to tweet a picture of Xander Bogaerts, and it had like translucent writing over it that said another night on the Nut Kick Express. That's what this team is right now.
It's another night on the
Nut Kick Express.
Yeah, that might have been.
I hope that guy's doing well. I forget his username on Twitter, but shout out. I hope you're doing well and maybe create a new meme because there are so many nights on the Nut Kick Express right now.
Yeah, that's how it feels. I think I might have to hop on. Even though I guess I wasn't around for the initial Nutkick Express. But regardless, Lucas Giolito bounced back in this.
How old were you in 2014, 2015?
I should know this off the top of my head, but math is not my strong suit. 12?
Not a numbers. Yeah, so, okay, so you weren't 12 years old on the streets of Red Sox Twitter?
No, I think I really jumped in like 15, 16.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so you were like 13 on Red Sox Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I still like to say, I guess I grew up with it to a certain extent.
That's like all the insert name here, enjoyer accounts. Those are all yes. Like 15-year-olds. Like there's not a single one of them is over the age of 18. None of them can vote. They all think they know better than the manager. And yeah, no offense to some of those accounts. Some of them are good, but
they just rage bait.
Yeah, it's great. The Tristan Casas enjoyers. I wish that was me. I am Tristan Casas enjoyer as well.
Might have to, if there's not a Justin Slayton enjoyer, I feel like you can really pave the way there.
That's a good one. That's a good one. New burner just dropped. Justin Slayton enjoyer.
I'll know who that is when they follow the pod account.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't have put that on the record. Now everyone will know. I'll be like Kevin Durant, hate tweeting people, and everyone's just like, "Oh, it's you. We know who this is."
There are those parody accounts where they just make burners pretending to be actual burners are so funny. Like there's Nico Harrison ones. That guy, I'm just falling upwards right now.
Well, did you see that they, if you trade your superstar to the team that has LeBron, you just get the number one pick?
Yes.
It happened with AD. Yeah. Insane.
Yeah.
You just automatically get the number one pick. Thanks for giving LeBron Luka. Here's Cooper Flagg.
Yeah, hopefully he worked out better than Zion did.
We're all aboard the Celtics 2026 number one overall pick, AJ DiBenasta.
Yeah, we'll see if that pans out.
The tank is on. I've seen enough Kristaps Porzingis. I've seen enough Jaylen Brown. I've seen enough of them all. Get me AJ DiBenasta.
I don't think I've seen enough Luke Kornet, though. That was insane.
I haven't seen enough Al Horford. I hope he never retires.
He might be trending that way. No, I'm not gonna lie.
Can't. I hope Al Horford plays forever.
We are riding high on the Celtics win, maybe quite literally. Before we went into our tangent, we were talking Lucas Giolito a little bit. Who went 6 2/3 in this game. He only allowed 2 hits, 1 earned, 5 strikeouts. A couple of those were against Bobby Witt Jr. So that is a very good bounce back start. Even though this offense, like kind of when we were previewing it, we were like, they're kind of ass. Either way, yeah. I think it was still a very encouraging start against a team that was on one hell of a heater.
Yeah, 15-2 coming into it, and you take 2 out of 3. Obviously, things kind of came to a screeching halt in Detroit because Tanner Houck fucking sucks.
Yep.
He's now on the IL with a you suck at baseball. That's what they placed him on the IL with. Cooper Criswell up in his place, which when we get into this Detroit series gives me some more complaints about the usage of Greg Weissert last night in the loss. But yeah, you didn't really get to – well, you didn't get to Lorenzen at all, which surprised me. I thought he was a guy that they were going to rough up. Same thing with Lugo. They had good numbers against Lugo in the past, and he doesn't really strike anybody out. So that's usually the type of guy that pitchers have success against. I hammered the over on Sunday because I thought both pitchers were going to get absolutely fucking shelled. And I was very, very wrong on that one, which sucks. But you have all the momentum coming out of John Henry – coming to talk to Devers, not to mention that he just fucking slapped his dick on the table and said, "Don't tell me how to do my fucking job."
Yep.
And hit, I think it was like 584 in the series. He hit one to pretty much the fountains in dead center in the finale. So it was great to see that kind of response out of Devers. And it just, it further proves the more honesty of being like, oh, get Devers out of here. He's fat. He's late. He's a piece of shit. He doesn't speak English in his press conference. Cause it always comes up in callers. He doesn't bother to speak English. Yeah. Because you morons take everything he says out of context and turn into this major thing. So if he's speaking in a second language, doesn't want to mince his words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
it's just a guy called in on Sunday to Red Sox review, and I was driving home and said, he was like, this guy will never be David Ortiz. He'll never be Big Poppy. He's fat. He's lazy. He's out of shape. He'll never be Big Poppy. Notoriously in shape person, David Ortiz. He'll never be Poppy. He's fat and lazy. Yeah, David Ortiz, notoriously in shape. But I don't necessarily know that Rafael Devers is going to be David Ortiz. He's probably the greatest designated hitter of all time. But I think the talent is certainly there for Devers to be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, David Ortiz, notoriously known for having a calm temperament at all times, never smashing bullpen phones. And, I mean, I guess he never really directly called out the front office, but I mean, you can see the similarities there.
I'm sure he did at some point. Probably. I would have to go back, but I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
And again, notoriously in shape, David Ortiz.
I mean, like, yeah.
The Devers discourse it drives me up a wall. And like, this guy's your best player. He's your best player. Point blank, period. Your best player. And like, people just want to ship him out of town. It makes no sense. Like, what do you, so say you trade Rafael Devers, you punted on the season. The season is over when you trade Rafael Devers. What are you getting back for him that you compete with? Like, what do these people never have an answer for things like that. Nobody ever pushes them on it. They call up, yeah, what do you got, Stevie from Lynn? Oh yeah, Devers fucking sucks, dude. He's fat and he's lazy. Let's trade him. All right, thanks for the call. See, everyone wants to trade Devers. No pushback. Like, what are we getting for him? You understand that you're punting on the season if that happens. Like, these people are like, all right, we're going to get rid of Devers and then World Series, here we come.
It's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling how quickly people turn on him as well. Because when he was in his slump, when he called out the front office in spring training, the same conversations were being had. The only difference was Vladdy Jr. was not signed to his extension yet, so in people's heads it was an easier trade to make.
If they flipped Devers for Vladdy Jr. and then paid Vladdy 500 and whatever mil that he signed for, I would have been absolutely furious.
Oh yeah,
the Devers too. Contract is so much better than that Vladdy deal, and like, people will say that. Or people hear you say that automatically assume that you're dumb, because for some reason people don't look at the stats of Vladdy, especially here. Like, they just know that he kills the Red Sox and hammers the ball at Fenway. So they just think he's some like 60 home run guy, but he's yet to put together two consecutive good seasons.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why random Bostonian callers just fell in love with the potential of a Rafael Devers for Vladdy Jr. trade. Because
Devers and Casas, get them the fuck out and get 6 months of Vladdy in.
Yeah, yeah, World Series bound. That's actually tied into our predictions. We knew that Rafael Devers was going to get traded for Vladdy midseason. That's why we're World Series bound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We both had them in there because of that. We just knew that they were going to trade Rafael Devers for Matt Shaw and Moises Ballesteros. And World Series, here we come.
Mm-hmm. I'm already firing up the duck boats, and Vladdy's going to be on the first one out.
Unbelievable.
Oh my God.
It drives me nuts.
It's never going to end now. I hope you're ready, because.
No. And if they do, we both agree that we think they're going to put him at first base eventually.
Yep.
And when they do, what if he slumps again, just like he did when the first week of the season? It's going to be the same thing. It's going to be, he's fat, he's lazy, he's out of shape, you should trade him. He's dragging his feet about playing first base, so he's sucking at the plate. Like, you know, those are going to be all narratives that we hear. And it's just until he settles in at first base. And then if he sucks at first, which I don't know about you, but I think he's going to suck at first. Probably. I think he's going to be Yeah, and he's going to be bad. It's going to be the same thing, like, oh, he's too, is he too dumb? Is he too lazy to learn first? Like, everybody says, like, all these fucking old, like, not even old-timers, like, mid-2000s players are like, oh, it's so easy to play first. Anybody could do it. But Cora directly addressed that and said it's not as easy as it used to be to play first. We do so much more positionally now than we did back then. And all these people just keep saying, oh, it's so easy, it's so easy. And then that's what everybody sticks with. Like, oh, it's so easy, he's too lazy to learn. Like, he needs to be out there at 10 a.m. like Dustin Pedroia was. Like, that's 100% what's going to be the narrative when he sucks at first.
Yeah, and I guess just prepare yourselves for it, because it feels like that's going to happen no matter what, especially with the state of the team right now. So we can get into the Tigers series, but I guess the first thing to come from this is they got absolutely smacked around on
Skull
Monday.
Boat raced.
Every word in the dictionary to describe this Tanner Houck start, which, by the way, was not the first start like this of Tanner Houck's season. He did this against the Tampa Bay Rays as well. I think he made MLB history. I don't remember the exact stat, but I think he's like 10 earned runs in like 2 1/3.
Twice in the season. Yeah.
Something like that. So they put him on the Phantom IL. I think it was 15 days, yeah? Or was it 10?
Yeah. Pitchers are always 15.
Okay, yeah. So it was a 15-day IL stint. Like you said, it was the you suck at baseball injury. This is... it's interesting because my agenda grows. I did pick
him. I found the Houck stat.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Two games in the entirety of MLB history wherein a pitcher went exactly 2 1/3, allowed exactly 12 base runners, and surrendered exactly 11 earned runs. They're both Tanner Houck this season.
Jesus. Thank God.
It's a little bit cherry-picked because it's exactly 12 and exactly 11. I wonder if it's 11 or more and then 12 or more base runners if it changes it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, either way, twice, dude, you're going to get blown the fuck up like that twice. Like, he's just...
In like a month span.
Yeah. The stuff isn't the same. And even after the All-Star break, which even Shohei took him deep in the All-Star game, the stuff just hasn't been the same. He's been... Well, last year he went from an all-star to like a number four, and then this year he's been straight up unplayable for four starts now.
Yeah. Doesn't seem to be improving at all. It's interesting for me because I picked him as my biggest disappointment. I didn't think he would be this bad.
You didn't think you'd be talking about optioning him to AAA?
No. I thought, oh, you know, he had the best season of his career easily last year. He had an all-star year, and obviously he trailed off as the innings piled up. I thought he was going to be serviceable, at least. Maybe a 4-5 ERA. This is just bush league. Like,
They should send him to AAA. If they weren't going to Phantom IL him, they should have sent them to AAA. Those were the two options that you could not let him make another start.
It gives me it. I don't know if this is too much of an overreaction, but it reminds me of Alek Manoah.
Yeah, a little bit. I was going to say, I feel like Houck isn't getting smacked around like Manoah, but I mean, Grant. I don't know. It's just the lasting image of that Manoah saga is him getting fucking shelled in the Gulf Coast League. So, like, it's hard to compare it to that because as of now, Tanner Houck hasn't given up like 14 runs to a bunch of 18-year-olds playing their first stateside baseball. But I don't know. It's bad. And that's what they had to do. Like, I don't know if they've announced a plan yet. I assume it's going to be Newcomb or Criswell pitching on Sunday. And Walker Buehler, which we'll get into, is going to pitch in the Mets series, which is next week, I think.
Yeah.
Beginning of during next week. Yeah. So you're going to get Buehler back, but it all circles back to the discussion about the roster construction. You probably could have used another starter. Like, you're relying on who's the number two? Tanner Houck, who trailed off. Walker Buehler, who you're banking on a good postseason. And to his credit, Walker Buehler has been good.
Mm-hmm.
But he's already hurt, and how much can you rely on him? Again, the swing and miss stuff just isn't there, and I'd prefer to have a guy who can strike guys out pitching after Crochet in the playoffs when you're talking about a number two there. And you have a logjam of outfielders that, and now Duran, we'll get into that. They rank 20th, I think it is, in the league in WRC plus from the leadoff spot, 92. And that's primarily Duran. I know we said it pre-show, but there was one game where Ref Snyder led off, and I think there was another game where Romy led off. So you're talking like a large majority of that sample size being Jarren Duran. He was great in that Cleveland series and hasn't really done too much else since then. Willier is back swinging a good bat, and even Sadon's been very good both defensively and offensively. So you just have a guy who's ready. Like, Roman Anthony is ready, and there's a chance, like I've said it time and time again, there's a non-0% chance that Roman Anthony gets called up and he's your best player. And mm-hmm. I truly believe that. And there's just no spot for him, and Devers going to first unlocks everything, but it doesn't seem like that's happening anytime soon. So until then, we're just going to keep being in this holding pattern where you're not fielding your best possible roster. And what do you do with Jarren Duran? I thought it was crazy that Cora didn't give him a day today over Willier and play Ref Snyder and left. But Duran had an okay game to his credit tonight. He actually hit the ball tonight, and he hit that in the ninth. He hit the ball right on the screws, just right to Riley Green. So, like, I don't know. It's tough to get mad at him for that because he put a good swing on it. But again, I don't know what you do, because I find it hard to believe that Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer aren't among your 26 best players in your organization. And go ahead.
Oh, it just seems like they're beating around the bush at this point, like we talked about before we hit the record button as well. Like, you've seen this team for now, it's got to be like 45 games. I think it's 45 games. They're 22 and 23.
Yeah, they're 22 and 23, yeah.
Yeah, so you've seen this team for about 2 months now. And they're mid. They're mediocre. They are not good. What is the best way to reinvigorate this offense than calling up two of your top prospects? I just don't understand what the holdup is.
And I hate to think that it's service time related, because I have said this over and over and over again, you're the Boston Red Sox. If Roman Anthony is the type, and Marcelo Meyer too, these are the types of players that you think they are, you should be paying them anyways. So why does it matter if you have them for an extra year? And in Roman Anthony's case, I think there's a really good chance that he's just a guy that you have to pay $30 million in arbitration anyways. Like, mm-hmm. Like, he's a Mookie Betts level talent, and it was Chris Bryant broke the arbitration record, then Mookie broke it. Like, I think we're talking about that level of player in Roman Anthony. So you're going to be paying him huge money anyway. So what does it matter? And honestly, like, I say this as a person with a Christian Campbell Rookie of the Year ticket, and we'll talk about him too, because he's largely been terrible for the better part since he came back from that injury. But I hope Roman Anthony wins Rookie of the Year and gets that extra year of service time and fucks them out of the pick just out of principle now. Just because if that's what they're doing and fucking around with service time, I hope he just drops his nuts on the table and wins it anyways.
I can't imagine that they're fucking with service time when they've said many times their championship window is open. Like, at this point, it just seems like they don't know what to do. Because they've been dicking around with Masataka Yoshida this entire year. And he's another factor in here. I mean, I don't see you sacrificing Roman Anthony at bats to bring Masataka Yoshida back from the dead. But it's interesting how they're playing with all of these guys. Because to me, I think they can get better at...
Go ahead. Finish your thought, then I'll...
I think you can get better at bats from Masataka Yoshida than maybe a third of this lineup right now. I don't know if that's a hot take or not. Exactly.
He doesn't strike out, which is the biggest flaw. So, no, I don't think that's too terrible of a take. And they're never going to sign another Japanese player again.
Nope.
they just have sent Masa to the fucking Shadow Realm.
Yeah, he's in the nether right now.
But also, like, with that being said, if they do move Devers to first base and then are like, all right, Masa, like, you're back, DH.
He can throw now.
Oh my God, my head is going to fucking explode.
You know that's what they're going to do.
Oh my, honestly, never mind. My head's going to explode, but watching Red Sox Twitter simultaneously melt down when that happens would be, that would be next level theater. It's just like, oh my, and story. I've seen it. I'm all hashtag. I'm all set on Trevor Story. I just, I don't need to see it anymore. He had what? He had a home run and a double in the middle game in Kansas City.
Yeah.
And then was useless for the rest of eternity, pretty much, besides that one hot stretch that he had in April.
Yep.
It's just, it's time. I Marcelo Meyer. And Trevor Story's going to play. We have talked endlessly about the platoons. Trevor Story's going to play whenever they play a lefty. And that's fine. You're paying him whatever. But it's just, it's sunk cost at this point. You're paying Trevor Story 20 whatever million, and he's a replacement level player. And that's fine. It's a mistake that, as Alex Cora said, the last guy did that. Like, the last guy told Devers he was the third baseman. It's something that you just have to live with. And I was holding out a little bit of hope that maybe he was going to have return to form and opt out and try and get more money. That is not happening. He is opting in. You're going to have him, and you're going to have to figure something out. And I've seen enough. It's Marcelo Meyer time. You need a spark. This team sucks. It's the same stupid shit. Every game is the same. Every single game is the exact same. And I want to give Trevor Story more runway, but there's only so many things they can do to give this team a spark. There's three wild card spots now. Teams are not in a rush to make trades. They're not. Everybody thinks they're in it right now, except for the Rockies and the White Sox. those are the two teams that know that they're not in it right now. Everyone else thinks there is. So I don't know who's making a trade right now. You saw a team that was desperate for starting pitching, and look at what the Brewers gave you for fucking Quinn Priester. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the type of deal that you're looking at making if you want to make a move right now. It's just, especially when you have two guys in AAA that are two top 10 prospects now. Meyer moved up, and like, it's just, it's time. It's enough fucking around. You need a spark. You need something. There's only so many different moves that you can make. And I'm sick of watching 500 baseball.
It's just the worst. And it has been terrible in years past, but it's even worse this year because you know that this team is capable. At least in years past, you were like, oh, well, they're probably going to be middle of the road, but maybe they'll get hot and we'll see. This year, you're heading into it with quite literally World Series expectations because of how wide open the American League is. And need I remind you, still, no team is really running away with the AL East at all. That window is getting closed by the day because you continue to shoot yourself in the foot. And before
I hope the Yankees continue to stretch it out, because then maybe it'll cause some urgency. Because then they'll be like, "Oh fuck, six out!" Like I know it's Garrett Crochet, and you're counting on him again to be your stopper on Friday. But like a lefty starter that strikes a lot of guys out. Like I know Sale. I think it's the fastball hasn't been getting as many whiffs. It's like up there with Roky Sasaki in the one pitch in baseball that's getting the smallest percentage of whiffs. But like, I think Sale, I'm going to take Sale strikeouts on Friday. So like, can they get to him the same way they got to Reagan's, the same way they got to Skubal a little bit? Like you're asking a lot out of this offense now to face three Cy Young candidates and get to all of them. So then you're looking at a three game losing streak. And I haven't looked at the pitching matchups yet, but the Braves have a good pitching staff. So I know you're going to miss Bryce Elder, who sucks. He's pitching tonight. He's their one shit bum. Are you going to see Spencer Schwellenbach? Are you going to see AJ Smith-Shawver? Like, do you like your chances against those guys? So we could be looking at a pretty extended losing streak here if things kind of start to fall off the rails. And like, at what point, like, is enough enough? Like, because for me, the alarm bells are absolutely blaring. Like, Luis Guerrero is not on this roster. Why? You're carrying, what, four lefties in the bullpen right now? Why? Mm-hmm. Like, why? What is the logic of having him down there, especially as Whitlock continues to implode? Like, you just need another high leverage guy, which is why when they signed Alex Bregman, everyone on planet Earth was just like, all right, we got Alex Bregman. Now we're going to go out. We're going to get another bullpen arm, and now we go. That bullpen arm just never came. Like, Tanner Scott signs with the Dodgers. Kirby Yates signs with the Dodgers. Like, going into the offseason, everyone just assumed that Tanner Scott was a Red Sox. Like, Jeff Passan wrote, like, oh, it's a given that Tanner Scott is going to be on the Red Sox. And it didn't even seem like they talked to him. So yeah. It's just, it all circles back to something we talked about in the Devers situation, just Craig Breslow. They had a good offseason. They just had an incomplete offseason because now we're seeing the flaws of the roster come out.
Yeah, and for the first couple of weeks, it was kind of easier to ignore that. But in the larger picture of things, you're just seeing an incomplete team on a game-to-game basis. And whether or not that incompleteness comes from the same side of the ball is a different question. But it seems like more often than not, one piece of this team is letting you down every single game. And it makes you want to slam your head in a car door. Like, yeah. I can't keep watching it.
My friend the other day, my buddy that I text about the Sox all the time during the games, he texted me, he's like, I don't know what that noise just was. But he texted me before one of the games, like, oh, should I watch the Red Sox or should I clamp my nuts in a waffle iron? Like, well, one way or another, you're getting to the waffle iron.
Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah. It's just before or after the bullpen chokes another game.
Yeah. And I guess we can start to get into the Tiger series a little bit, but that game one, whatever, how Sox you get blown the fuck out. And then the question for the, like, Sox booth question of the day was, which would you prefer, a blowout loss or a one-run loss? How is it the second time I did the 1-1? Anyways, which would you prefer, a blowout loss or a one-run loss? And immediately you get your fucking right to the waffle iron in game two, where Whitlock, he blows, what was it? It was a two-run lead at the time in the sixth.
I think so.
Then David Hamilton, my guy, David Hamilton. I've never said a bad word about the guy, not once, not never. He hits a two-run bomb, ties it up. You end up going to extras. You score a run in the 10th. And Greg Weissert comes in. He blows that. And then Christian Campbell, it looked like he, like, popped it up to, like, shallow right field that was going to, like, be a play for the second baseman. Somehow it gets out, two-run bomb. At the time, they only had Liam Hendricks left. It was either keep Weissert in or Liam Hendricks. And you keep Weissert in. He gives up, was it a walk or the ghost runner? Single.
Yeah.
Yeah, ghost runner single, Javi Baez. That's what it was.
Yeah, and Javi Baez got you twice in this game.
On the same pitch.
Yeah, which is awesome. I mean, listen, I don't hate the Tigers by any means. I picked them to win the AL Central. But when you have Javi Baez, who is in the midst of a renaissance season, get you twice in the nine hole. Yeah. That's painful. That's painful. Yeah. Six RBIs so in this game.
Where do you stand on the Weissert stuff?
I think you should have taken him out because he was at like 24 pitches or something. Like,
yeah, 22.
It's different if, you know, you get one out or you have a quick inning, you have like 10 pitches or so heading into that second inning of work. You're already at 24 pitches. You're basically at your limit as a relief pitcher. And you have Liam Hendricks there. Tomorrow doesn't matter. Like, I don't understand why you don't just put him in.
The bullpen was already going to be gassed.
Exactly. Today. And you had the off day.
I alluded to it, but my gripe with not using Hendricks is that you knew that you were going to put Hauk on the IL.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you knew, because it was, what is his name? Hunter Knoll tweeted the Syracuse broadcasters just said something about Criswell being unavailable, or maybe it was Buffalo, whoever Worcester's playing.
Mm-hmm.
Their broadcaster said that Criswell was unavailable because he's something's happening with the big club.
Yeah.
And so they knew that Houck was going on the IL. So you knew you were going to have Criswell if things went wrong in the finale tonight with Jesus Christ.
Dobbins.
Dobbins, Jesus. Not my night. if things went wrong with Dobbins, so you knew you had someone who would give you length. At the bare minimum, you had him who could, you had Criswell who could give you multiple innings. So just go to Hendricks. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Weissert has thrown, he threw 31 pitches in an outing. That is his most in a game. But besides that, it's once he threw 20, once he threw 22, in all of those outings, he got hit hard. 20, like, I just don't, 31 is the max. Like, I just don't understand the need to bring him back out, especially because Hendricks has been good. Like, we've both kind of been expecting Hendricks to start getting more high leverage opportunities. So yeah, you knew you were making a move, especially one that could give you length in the bullpen. I just, and with Tarik Skubal going, I didn't even mention that part. With Skubal going the next day, that win is so much more important because you know that you're facing one of the best pitchers in baseball. So, like, all right, what kind of chance do we have at beating Tarik Skubal? I'll tell you, they were plus 205 on the money line tonight. So that's what Vegas thought of your chances of beating Tarik Skubal. So you were between that and getting swept. So I just think you have to go after the win. Like, I understand it's a 162 slate, and Cora always says that, oh, it's a marathon. We can't manage every game like it's game seven of the World Series. But, like, eventually these one-run losses are going to start to bite you in the ass. And, like, right now they're not in the playoff spot. And if they continue to lose these games, like, playoff teams don't lose those games. The Tigers are a playoff team. And what did they just do? They fucking walked you off twice, because teams like that don't lose games like that. And the Red Sox lose way too many of them. That was, what, 13 now? One-run losses?
I think so. It is just so infuriating, because today, even in the finale, you sort of got to Skubal. He gave up 5 runs in this game. He yeah. still, like you said, he struck out 11 guys, but even still, 5 runs off of the best pitcher in the game, probably, not named Paul Skenes, maybe. I don't know. I mean, yeah, that's up for debate.
One of the two.
But either way, and the other thing that gets me is they used a bunch of different relievers: Justin Wilson, Justin Slayton, Aroldis Chapman, all who went yesterday as well. Did Wilson? I don't know if Wilson did, but the other two definitely did.
I think Wilson did. I'll look it up right now.
But
pretty either, sure he did.
I'm
I think he had the sixth.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he had the sixth.
Yeah. So either way, point being, if you were going
to use the fifth, he came in right after Bayo.
Yeah. Yeah. So point being, if you were going to use these guys anyway, then I don't see why you don't just put Hendricks out there.
Justin Wilson threw 4 pitches.
Yeah.
So yeah, you knew he was available today.
Yeah, it seemed like you said, like, you want to go for the win against good teams. Like, you want to be able to come out of this being like, hey, the Tigers are really good, but we stole a win, and you'll take that. You're heading back to Boston. That would make you 3-3 on the road trip. That's a lot different than 2-4 and getting swept.
Back under 500.
Yeah, and the second.
Walked off twice.
Oh, boy. Yeah, and now all of the negative momentum heading into the Braves series, which did you have anything else on the Tigers?
No, I don't think so. Whitlock, he has one good pitch right now. The sinker's trash. The slider's trash. The changeup is the only usable pitch. I don't know what you do. I sincerely hope that they didn't fuck this up beyond recognition, because it would be so Red Sox to have a lights out reliever 3 years ago and then jerk him back and forth between being a starter and reliever to the point where he's broken beyond recognition. But I certainly have my fears of that. They need another high leverage arm. It has to be Luis Guerrero. Because, like we said, no one's making a deal, especially not for a reliever at this time of year. So it has to be Luis Guerrero, and you have to see what he's got. Cutter Crawford is throwing. I know. I wonder if that's an option they look at in the bullpen. Maybe. I wonder if when Hauk is gone, maybe they say, like, let's see if your stuff ticks up and if the swing and miss ticks up in the bullpen. But, like, even then, that's not a guy I'm sprinting to put in high leverage situations. Like, Tanner Houck's going to have to come in the fifth inning of a 7-0 ball game to pitch out of the pen before I even consider putting him in a game that is meaningful.
I'm going to read you some stats real quick. So this guy pitched last year. He had an exactly 3 ERA in 72 innings, and he struck out 99. Is that a guy you'd want in your bullpen?
Yeah, yeah. Sounds like a guy. Like,
do you know who this is?
I don't know.
It is free agent David Robertson. Who's just sitting out there.
Interesting.
Just waiting for someone to pick him up. Which they should have done in the offseason.
Yeah. And that was the guy that, like, everyone, like, admittedly, like I said, like, when you signed Bregman, everyone's like, all right, one more reliever, and now we go. Like, that was the guy that everyone was talking about. Like, I just don't understand how a call hasn't been made.
Yeah.
Like, especially, like, knowing that now. Like, I didn't even realize he was still a free agent. I thought maybe he signed a minor league deal with someone. Nope. Like, that's – it seems like such an easy fix, and yet they don't do it. Why? Like, we know they have the budget too. Like, we know that, like, we know that Henry's not going to be like, oh, you want to give David Robertson the league minimum to come in and see if he can fix the bullpen a little bit? No, sir. Like, he's in it to win it right now. And this, the window's open. So, like, it just, I don't know. Now I'm mad about that now.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't mean
that's
to.
That's now on my agenda. That's now on my agenda. Sign David Robertson.
Yeah. I'm happy to provide the agenda. It's just, it makes no fucking sense how he's still out here, one, and two, how he hasn't signed with the Red Sox yet, because that seems like a pretty easy fix if he still has anything left. Also, another interesting thing, 45-year-old Rich Hill signed a minor league deal with the Royals.
Thank God. Oh my God. If they just signed Rich Hill, if they put 40-whatever-year-old Rich Hill in the bullpen and was like, let's see if that fixes things. The guy's throwing 86. Like, oh yeah, let's see if Rich Hill's stuff ticks up in the bullpen. He's going to be throwing 88 because it's in the pen. Like, I'm just happy it's not the Red Sox. No offense to Rich Hill. I hope he ties, I think it is, Edwin Jackson's record for most major league teams played on. Very happy he's not with the Red Sox.
Yeah. Yeah. Good luck to him. Milton native, Milton legend. Also one of my friends from college is his niece or something. Been trying to see if she'll get in contact with him to get him on the podcast, but we'll see if that ever pans out.
Rich Hill, you are welcome anytime.
Yeah. Yeah. Zach didn't say anything bad about you.
I said I was happy for him and I hope he breaks a major league record. And you know what? He wouldn't have been able to break that record if he signed with the Red Sox because he's already played for them. So credit to me.
credit to Zach Coe, as always. Do you want to preview the Braves series now? Or
We don't have any starters for the Braves.
Yeah. Yeah. I looked at the ESPN probables, but that's almost never right.
Yeah. I think we do roster construction.
Okay.
Because it's been an overarching theme of the episode that the roster construction doesn't make any sense. But, like, the more and more frustrating games that they have, the more and more the roster construction, or the less and less, I should say, the roster construction makes any sense. You have Roman Anthony just turned 21. He's hitting the shit out of the ball. I know, actually, he hasn't been hitting the shit out of the ball recently. He had his first extra base hit since that foot injury. Mm-hmm. I think it was about 2 weeks ago. So hit his first extra base hit the other day. But you have him, number one prospect in baseball. Even still, the hard hit metrics are in the 99th percentile in AAA, and the barrel percentage is absurd. Where do you play him? Because Sadam has been great, admittedly. Just like David Hamilton, never said a bad word about Sadam Rafael, who made a ridiculous catch tonight off of Willier's deflection. So Rafael swinging a good bat. Duran, it's like you're not giving up on Jaron Duran yet, and Willier has been fantastic. So what do you do with Roman Anthony? Like, it, this didn't sneak up on them. Like, Baseball America didn't just magically be like, Roman Anthony, he was ranked number 742, and now he's the number one prospect in baseball. You knew that you had this guy. Same with Meyer. Like, and it gets a little trickier with Story, because you also know you have Story to this contract. But again, like we're not in the business of trying to like preserve feelings. We're not in the business of, oh, this guy's making how X amount of dollars. Like, we're in the business of winning baseball games. And do you actually think that Trevor Story gives you a better chance at winning baseball games than Marcelo Meyer? Because I don't.
No.
So like, I just don't, I don't know what you do. And we said it, the piece of the puzzle is Devers to first base, because then it opens up DH. You can rotate the DH with Meyer or, excuse me, Anthony, and whatever outfielder that you want to get off their feet. It just, it's, is that going to happen? And like, and that falls on Devers. Like, I know I spent however long bashing all the Devers idiots, because they're exactly that, they're idiots. But like I said in the last episode, Devers is also being a crybaby bitch, and he should just start taking grounders at first base, because that makes, that's what makes them a better baseball team. And like, he should be the guy that wants them to be a good baseball team. He's here for the next 10 years. He's going to play his entire career with the Red Sox. Like, he should want to be good for the duration of that, and he should want to be contend now. Mm-hmm. And it, so that part drives me insane. But again, he's your best player. Like, both things can be true, that he's like, this entire situation is botched from start to finish. And I don't want to rehash it, but it just, I don't know what they do at all, because they can't keep going like this.
Yeah. The Sedan Rafaela super utility agenda continues to make sense, because not only does that allow you to carry less infielders, because you have probably too many on your bench, or I don't know if too many is the right word, but it seems like we don't need a David Hamilton on the major league roster. Cool. That home run was great. Tied the game. They still lost. So ultimately, I don't care. And also, he has been a lot worse than good, or a lot more bad than good this year. So one home run is not really going to sway my thoughts on him. I know Zach said he never said a bad thing about David Hamilton. I may have only said bad things about David Hamilton.
My guy, David Hamilton. That's yeah. My guy. I love Hammy.
I'm okay with firing him into the sun, along with Connor Wong, by the way, who
I never need to see Connor Wong again.
I refuse to go an entire episode without bashing Connor Wong, because Jesus Christ, dude, that Carlos Narvaez may be the best catcher we have had since I don't even know who. Like, it's hard for me to say, because Christian Vasquez, I guess. Like, defensively, he has been absolutely unbelievable, and the offense is shaky, but it's better than most catchers we've had. Connor Wong does neither well.
Useless. Yeah.
Nothing. Useless. Absolutely nothing. They put him in the ninth inning of this game to catch Chapman in the finale of the Tigers series. What did he do?
He immediately fucked up.
Immediately launched a fucking ball over, was it Story's head?
Yeah.
It must have been, to give the runner the extra base and ultimately lose the game. Now, I don't know. Chapman got two quick outs after that. So if that runner's on second instead of third, maybe you're heading into another inning.
Yeah, are you testing Rafaela's arm?
No.
Granted, the Tigers tested Red Sox outfielders a lot in this game, and they were safe both times on pretty bang-bang plays. But, I mean, like, to your point, the Sedan Rafaela super utility agenda is growing, but like, how do you, like, you can't make that move now, because in his last 42 plate appearances, he's hitting .316 with an .850 OPS. Like, can you work him in enough to the point where it warrants that? And now, like, is that Sedan Rafaela that we're going to get for the rest of the year? Like, I would say no, but
like, go ahead. Probably not, but I wonder if Christian Campbell might need an IL stint, and you put Rafaela at second base, then you call up Roman Anthony.
Yeah, but then you still have like, all right, well, where's Meyer? Like, because I think they both
get called up together.
I think they need both of them at once. Like, I just think that that's the jolt that we need. Like, getting in, like, I know I said it that, like, on the last episode, but like, oh, you can't expect them to be the saviors. Too late. The expectation of these guys is to come up and be absolute studs, is to be absolute monsters. And that is going to be the expectation of them no matter what when they get called up. That ship has long since sailed. Like, these two guys are expected to be stars, and they're going to be expected to perform like stars. And I think they're up for it. But, like, I don't understand. Like, I've seen enough of everybody. Except for Sid on Raphael, who has been good and has made some. He's kind of won me over. I'm so wishy washy on Sedan. I wanna not like him, but then he does shit like, because I loved JBJ.
Yeah.
So it makes me feel a little hypocritical to be like a Sedan Raphael hater. But they also didn't have Roman Anthony when JBJ was the center.
Right. Yeah, it's like your defense can only take you so far, and I think it's platinum glove worthy right now. But are you going to sacrifice at bats for Roman Anthony to keep a hot Raphaela in the lineup? I don't know.
It's the same thing, like, I know with the platoon situation. Like, I do think it's going to be that, but are you going to face a lefty enough to where it gives Sedan enough traction? Like, because you don't want him to end up like David Hamilton. I think Sedan's better than David Hamilton, but like, if he's only playing once or twice a week, like, what effect does that have on him, like, actually performing when he is playing? I don't know.
I wonder how frequently they can sub out other guys, because to me it seems like you could benefit from Sedan Raphaela taking or giving someone a different guy a breather, like, pretty much every game.
Yeah. But we know Duran likes to post. Willier, like, how often can you keep his bat out of the lineup?
Yeah, it's a good question.
I've kind of come around to maybe giving Christian Campbell some grounders at first, to be honest with you.
Wouldn't be the worst thing.
It frees up one of your log jams. It gets Meyer up here. What you do from there, I don't know, because then, like I said, like, I think they both come up. So, like, the fact that they didn't trade one of Abreu or Duran is crazy. And, like, it's easy to revisionist history and say they should have traded Duran because he's been bad. But, like, just one of them. Like, obviously, if Duran was this and then Abreu was doing this on the Padres, you're like, fuck. But, like, also, if you have Michael King or Dylan Cease, like, if you had Michael King, he's been fantastic this year.
Yeah,
are you really that mad? Like, I'd be a little mad, but who knows if they would have done that for Duran. And this is getting way too much into hypotheticals, but it speaks to the larger picture about the roster. Like I said, these guys didn't sneak up. Marcelo Meyer was the fourth overall pick. Mm-hmm. Like, you knew you had him. I don't understand what the fuck the thinking is.
Yeah, it's also interesting. I don't remember if it was, like, maybe the top, like, six or seven picks or what, but in the 2020 draft, I think Meyer is the only one who hasn't debuted yet. It was, like, Lawler, Davis.
Job, Leiter.
Kowser, maybe.
Lawler, Kowser. I'm pulling it up right now. Henry Davis, Jack Leiter, Jackson Jobe, Colton Kowser, Jordan Lawler. Those are five of the top six picks in the 2021 draft. Myers was fourth, obviously. He's the only one that hasn't. It's kind of cherry-picked, because then once you get further down, like, Frank Mazzucato sucks.
Yeah.
Benny Montgomery sucks. Sam Bachman sucks. Kumar didn't sign. Brady House hasn't debuted. Harry Ford hasn't debuted. Andrew Painter hasn't debuted. Like, it's been a mixed bag aside from that, but it's annoying, because, like, some of the, like I said, like, Frank Mazzucato sucks. Like, Marcelo Meyer is awesome.
Yeah.
So, like, I just don't, it's annoying. I could go on for hours about how mad I am about the state of this team right now, because it seems to me that there's two obvious spark plugs in AAA just waiting to be called up. Like, they have nothing left to prove.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned. And, like, they're just right there. And because your roster doesn't make any sense, they can't be called up right now. And, like, I don't even think that, like, I think that only applies for Anthony. I think Meyer, the roster makes sense if you tell Story that he's not good enough to start anymore.
which seems like where we may be headed if his cold streak keeps up. And it doesn't help. The Red Sox schedule does not help at all, because we're getting ready for three versus the Braves. By the way, the City Connect jerseys, I think, are debuting in that series, so we'll see how those look.
That's what the rumors say.
Yeah.
Rumor mill saying.
And then you have three against the Mets, who I think are the best team in the National League right now. You have the Orioles, who are not good. Four games against the Orioles, so that's okay. Then you have the Brewers.
That has to be three out of four.
Yeah. Then you have the Brewers. Then you have the Braves again. And not too far off of that is the first Yankees series. So you could be looking at significantly under 500 by the end of this tough stretch.
I just looked at some Trevor Story numbers. Oh boy. That was a very natural read. Like, I didn't even mean to cut you off with that. They just populated. Okay. Holy fuck. This is including that White Sox series at home where he went off. It's 86 at bats. 186, 247, 291, which is good for a 538 OPS. 29 strikeouts, 4 walks.
Not going to do it.
16 hits, 13 singles.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah, not great. It's my favorite drop to use of Alex Corgo. Not great. That is not great. I don't know how, like, you can't just keep doing this with him. Like, we can't, like, that is not playable for now. 21 games, 3 weeks. He's been, and that is, I was incredibly generous, including that White Sox series, because it gets even more bleak if you don't include that series. If we started in the Seattle series, let's see where that puts us. 122 in 18 games. With a 350 OPS.
Yikes.
I just, one extra base hit. 28 strikeouts, 4 walks.
He sucks.
Just not good enough.
No.
And I'm a Heim guy, but holy fuck. Like, I am so more than all set on Trevor Story.
And the Red Sox are the type of team that can eat that money and it not be a super big deal. Like,
yeah,
they were still paying Pablo Sandoval's contract when they won the World Series in 2018, right? They might still be paying that contract.
I believe they're still playing. I almost am almost positive they're still paying Manny.
Yeah, oh, they definitely are. Okay, but I am curious. Do you think by the end, okay, we'll say by June 6th, because that is the first Yankees game of the season, do you think Meyer and Anthony will be called up by then?
June 6th. I want to say yes, because how can they keep them down for another, 3 weeks?
Yeah.
Like, I just don't know how you keep them down for another 3 weeks, but there have been no indications that they're, like, even considering it.
I know.
So I don't think they'll be up.
I don't either. And it shouldn't feel that way. It really shouldn't. Because this has the potential to get ugly. We mentioned before, heading into this stretch, that this was going to be a big test whether you see if this team is worth your time or not. Doesn't seem like it.
Dude,
we're not far into it.
All the people when the Celtics get eliminated on Friday night, all these people are going to tune into the Red Sox, and they're going to have just been shut down by Chris Sale, and they're going to lose like a 1-0, 2-1 game. And then they're going to have a 4-game losing streak. They're 2 games under 500. They're hitting Trevor Story in the fucking 6-hole. He's hitting 130 over his last 70 at-bats. Like, that's what they're going to tune into, and they're going to go, well, all right, same old Red Sox. Like, all right, see you in wait for the Patriots. Like, oh, what are the Patriots' schedule just released? What are they looking like? Like, you have to do something. And I know that I've said it over and over again. I can't believe they haven't done something yet, because at what point now is it not still early in the season? Like, I know that, like, generally Memorial Day, but, like, also a lot of promotions are happening across the minors right now. And it's a time to, like, where guys are getting promoted. So, like, do we see it, like it would make my day if tomorrow Jeff Passan tweeted that the Sox are planning on bringing up Meyer or Anthony for Friday's game.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't seem like that's going to happen. I don't know. It's so frustrating, because you can, like we said, you can't just keep letting Trevor Story hit 184. You can't just keep waiting around for David Hamilton to do something. You need to do something about first base. Like, how much more Nick Sogard and Abraham Toro can we take? Like, how much more Romy Gonzalez can we take? Like, it all hinges on Devers. And at a certain point, like, someone should, like, Cora should have just slapped him and just been like, come on.
Might have been the easiest fix.
Yeah, just been like, hey, how about this? How about you play first base and the number one prospect in baseball can come up in DH? And he was like, no, I'm good at DH. He just slaps him. Like, how about now?
Oh, man. Then I think he would be taking ground balls before our June 1st deadline.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. I think they're... Honestly, you seem to be much more optimistic. I am very, very down on this team right now. Like, I think they're going to finish 81-81.
Oof. Yeah, you said I'm optimistic. It's more just copium at this point. We're stuck with this team for 120 something more games. So I don't really have a 119, choice.
119, I think, or no, 117.
27? I think it's 127.
Jesus Christ.
Dude, normally I'm not the math guy. I think
how
that's
right. How many podcast hosts does it take to do basic addition?
Oh, more than we have.
Or I guess it would be basic subtraction in this case.
Dude. Well,
what is 162 minus 45? And we're like, let me take off my shoes.
Where were we going?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
This one's gotten off the rails.
It has. I think it was much needed. It felt like sort of a therapy session after this hell of a series. I hate to break it to you, Red Sox fans. It might get worse before it gets better. Because we have three against the Braves, then three against the Mets. What do you think the record will be by the end of this?
The six games?
Yeah.
2-4?
Yeah.
1-5? What is the Mets pitching lineup? I mean, even – I think it was the Fangraphs Cy Young indicator. The top three guys were all Mets.
Was it then, like Griffin Canning?
Yeah, David Peterson, and I forget who the other one was.
Not
and
Clay Holmes, Kodai right?
Stanga. Oh, it was Clay Holmes, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
And then, like, Kodai Senga was, like, eighth.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so buckle up if you're still checked in to the Red Sox right now.
Everyone better hope the Celtics force 7.
Yeah,
Sox are the Boston Red Sox. There is no bigger fan of the Boston Celtics than the Boston Red Sox, because the second the Celtics are eliminated and everyone turns their attention to this garbage, everyone's going to tune out immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, to be playing like... Like, I know, like, it's, like, a lot of talk radio fodder, but I do think it's a legitimate thing that people are not going to check into. Like, not everybody is a sicko. Like, there are people that only watched the Celtics tonight.
Yeah, yeah, and it just doesn't seem like it's on a good trajectory. I think regardless, we will both be watching.
I almost just died.
I saw that. Are you okay?
Yeah, I don't know. My throat has kind of been itchy, and I don't know. It caught up to me there. I almost just died.
I think we might need to get out of here before you actually die.
Yeah, this team is causing me a slow and painful death.
Yeah, this like, whole episode has just been the mental deterioration of both of our brains.
Yeah, I just don't, like, I don't know how many times I can say it's frustrating. I'm sick of watching 500 baseball. Fucking do something. I don't care what it is. Just do something. Tell, like, Craig Breslow, besides spitting in the face of your franchise player, are you awake?
Yeah, yeah. Couldn't have said it better myself. Yeah. I think Craig, time will tell. Time will tell in this case. We'll see if next time we check in, if the vibes are any higher. I don't think they will be.
What do you have them going? I have them going 2-4. Next six, what do you have them going?
I will put them at 3-3.
So that leaves them at 2 games under .500. They're gonna be... I've got them 6 under at the end of this, or no, 4 under at the end of this stretch.
Either way, neither of our predictions are good for the next
in the week. Battle of Zach versus Math on this episode, Math has logged a resounding victory.
My money's on Math maybe every time.
Oh my god. Yeah. Math Tommy. Math just absolutely bodied me in this episode. Hate to see it.
Yeah, stay tuned next time for another iteration of Zach versus Math.
Yeah, Zach versus Math.
Hammer the house on Math.
Math is the heavy favorite.
Oh man. Well, either way, apologies for how off the rails this episode got, but it's kind of how we cope with the train wreck of a season we are trending towards. So regardless, thank you so much for listening. And as always, we'll check in with you guys next week.
See ya.